Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Monday, June 17th, 2019. Coming up this hour,
investors await a handful of key interest rate decisions this week, led by the Fed.
Boeing CEO predicts the grounded 737 MAX will return to service this year.
Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross says the prospect of a major trade deal is unlikely at the G20 summit.
Secretary of State Pompeo says the U.S. has unmistakable evidence that Iran was behind attacks on oil tankers, plus President Trump has fired some of his pollsters. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stanshower in sports. Yankees won in Chicago. Mets lost to the Cardinals, and Gary Woodland held off Brooks Koepka and captured the U.S. Open.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm John Tucker.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. futures higher this morning following a mixed session in Asia, coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street. And we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 4 points this morning. Dow futures up 25. NASDAQ futures up 21. The DAX in Germany is little change. The CAC in Paris up 0.1%. And the FTSE 100 up about the same. 10-year Treasury down 7/32, yield 2.10%. NYMEX crude oil down 0.3% or 19 cents at $52.32 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.5% or $6.70 at $13.37.80 an ounce. The euro 1.1214 against the dollar. The yen 108.58. John.
The market action this week will likely be determined by some key central bank decisions led by the Federal Reserve in the U.S. We get the story from Bloomberg's Michael McKee.
Unexpected strength in retail sales won't derail Fed officials from suggesting patience is no longer the watchword for U.S. monetary policy. While investors don't expect a rate cut at this week's meeting, they do anticipate a signal the Fed has moved closer to lowering rates. A weak payrolls report and uncertainty over trade and geopolitical developments rattling market confidence. The Fed is the market's focus, but other major central banks meet this week as well. Analysts say political turmoil, a lack of clarity about Brexit, and weaker than expected economic data provide reasons for the Bank of England to remain on hold. The Bank of Japan isn't expected to act either, although Governor Haruhiko Kuroda said last week there are downside risks to the outlook, including potential Fed rate cuts that might strengthen the yen too much. Michael McKee, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Mike, thank you. With unemployment close to a half-century low, the economy is sure to be a campaign theme as President Trump seeks re-election. But others are highlighting flaws in the economic recovery. Chris Condon wrote the story for Bloomberg News.
We're about to hit a 10-year record for this economic expansion. And there's no doubt that President Trump is going to claim credit, and rightfully, for the relatively better economic growth we saw in the last couple of years. He cut taxes. He agreed to expand spending. That's boosting economic growth on the demand side. Now, there are other reasons, however, to question how much oomph he's really going to get out of this in the ballot box. Overall rates of growth are still very poor. The distribution of benefits during this recovery are also very unequal. Wage gains among middle-income Americans have not been that impressive. So when Americans go to the ballot box in 2020, there is possibly a very limited benefit that Donald Trump will gain from this expansion.
The trade war with China, which most economists say is a near-term threat to U.S. growth, is another likely campaign issue in 2020.
Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross reiterating that a major trade deal is unlikely to emerge from a possible meeting between President Trump and Chinese President Xi Jinping at the Group of 20 summit in Osaka this month.
You never have a deal on anything until you have a deal on everything. So right. In that sense, with things as complicated as trade negotiations, there's always going to be a degree of uncertainty until you really get to the finish line.
Ross made the comments with Bloomberg at the Paris Air Show.
Intel CEO Bob Swan says the chipmaker is reviewing its global supply chain amid the growing trade war between the U.S. and China.
Since the tariff started last year, both with our manufacturing operations as well as the assembly operations of our customers, we have been working to mitigate the impact of tariffs by looking at more effective ways for the movement of goods around the world so that our products won't be more expensive at point of sales.
And Swan made the comments in an exclusive interview with Bloomberg in Tel Aviv.
Huawei has prepared a doomsday outlook for smartphone sales because of the Trump administration's blacklisting. Bloomberg has learned that the Chinese company is ready for a drop of up to 60% in international phone shipments. Huawei is the world's second largest smartphone seller.
There's calm in the streets of Hong Kong this morning following yesterday's massive protests. We get the very latest from Bloomberg's Jody Schneider in Hong Kong.
Karen and John, it's a very different situation in Hong Kong today, where there's a few protesters on the street, very different than what organizers say were up to 2 million people demonstrating yesterday. The issue is the extradition proposal that would have allowed China to extradite people from Hong Kong. Chief Executive Carrie Lam suspended the policy, but that wasn't enough for the protesters who want to see her resign and want to see the policy pulled. In Hong Kong, this is Jody Schneider for Bloomberg Daybreak.
Jody, thank you. Boeing expects the grounded 737 MAX to return to the skies later this year. CEO Dennis Muilenburg spoke to Bloomberg's Guy Johnson at the Paris Air Show.
We feel very confident in the MAX. We know we have work to do to rebuild the public's confidence in that airplane. We'll get it back up and flying safely. I'm convinced with the updates we're making to the MAX, it'll be one of the safest airplanes ever to fly.
Yeah.
We still have more than 4,000 of those airplanes in backlog. That is a multi-decade airplane that's going to be very strong operator for our customers.
Muilenburg did not give a specific timetable for the 737 MAX's return.
Shares of Lufthansa are slumping the most in 3 years after the company said it fears a European fare war will squeeze profits at least for the rest of the year. A Europe-wide fight for market share forced Lufthansa to lower profit expectations for 2019. The stock is down more than 10%.
And Deutsche Bank reportedly considering setting up a bad bank unit. According to the Financial Times, the business could eventually hold as much as $56 billion of risk-weighted assets. The FT says the plan also included shrinking or closing Deutsche Bank's equity and rates trading businesses out of Europe. S&P futures 5 points higher. This is Bloomberg. Pat is 5:07 on Wall Street. Time now to get news from around the world. And we say good morning to Bloomberg's Michael Barr.
Good morning, John. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is stressing diplomacy and responding to suspected attacks on oil tankers near a Middle East shipping route. Pompeo says American officials are reaching out to their foreign counterparts. Pompeo on CBS's Face the Nation says that intelligence officials have lots of data, lots of evidence tying Iran to alleged attacks near the Strait of Hormuz.
Of course, the president will consider everything we need to do to make sure, right? What's the president said? We don't want Iran to get a nuclear weapon.
CBS's Face the Nation can be heard right here on Bloomberg Radio. Argentina's president is not ruling out a cyber attack after what he called an unprecedented power blackout. It struck 5 South American countries yesterday: Argentina, Uruguay, Brazil, Chile, and Paraguay. President Mauricio Macri says the cause of the power grid failure is being investigated. President Donald Trump's re-election campaign has severed ties with some of its pollsters after reported leaks of surveys showing him trailing former Vice President Joe Biden in key states. It comes ahead of President Trump officially kicking off his 2020 campaign with a rally in Orlando, Florida tomorrow. Meanwhile, we're learning more about President Trump's one-on-one with ABC's George Stephanopoulos. President Trump talked about a major issue this presidential election.
We're going to produce phenomenal health care. And we already have the concept of the plan, and it'll be much better.
Tell people what the plan is.
Yeah, well, we'll be announcing that in about 2 months, maybe less.
The president also says the fight over border security will be a hot election topic. It was debate night in the UK. Bloomberg's Tim Ross has more from London.
Tory rivals battling to be the next UK prime minister traded insults over Brexit in the first TV debate of the party contest on Sunday. During the 90-minute Channel 4 broadcast, candidates argued over the radical option of suspending Parliament as a last resort. But the frontrunner, Boris Johnson, wasn't there. Instead, his place was filled with an empty lectern on the stage. In London, Tim Ross, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts. in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. Coming up on 5:10, Wall Street time now for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. And here's John Stashower.
John Brooks Koepka was looking to make some history. First golfer since Willie Anderson in 1905 to win the U.S. Open 3 straight years. He nearly did. Started the final round at Pebble Beach quickly. 3 birdies the first 4 holes. He got to within 1 shot of the lead, but Gary Woodland never gave it up all weekend. He went to 18, needed only a bogey. He ended up with a birdie with a 30-foot putt. And the 35-year-old, who until last year had never had a top 10 finish at the Open, won his first major.
I don't think my game's where it needs to be, but it's getting there. Becoming a more complete player, I have more shots. I can rely more on my putting now. I can rely on my short game, things I couldn't do even last year. And becoming a more complete player, and I can play different golf courses. I mean, people growing up said the U.S. Open wouldn't suit me because I'm a long hitter, I'm a bomber, you know, went out and improved. I think to everybody else, what I always believe that I'm pretty good.
Yep, it's pretty good, too. In 3 majors this year, 1 win and 2 second-place finishes. Tiger Woods, who bested Koepka at the Masters, says he's going on a family vacation, won't play again until the British Open next month. Yankees salvage the split in Chicago, 10-3 route as they come home to battle Tampa Bay for first place. Tonight will be Edwin Encarnacion's debut in pinstripes. Acquired from Seattle, Yanks have sent Clint Frazier to the minors and someone else likely to leave tomorrow with the expected return of Giancarlo Stanton. Mets have put Noah Syndergaard on the injury list with a hamstring injury, and then Jason Vargas had to leave yesterday's game after fouling a pitch off. The Cardinals won 4-3, and an 8th-inning homer by Met killer Paul DeJong. The Cards win 3-4. In the series. A little closer for the U.S. at its second game at the Women's World Cup in France after 13-0 in the opener. This one was 3-0 over Chile. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. John?
All right, John, thanks a lot. A Babe Ruth road jersey dating back to 1928 is sold at auction for $5.6 million. Hunt Auctions, which handled the sale, says the price breaks a record for the most expensive piece of sports memorabilia ever sold. A Ruth jersey from 1920 previously sold for $4.4 million. The Yankees jersey was part of a collection of items that Ruth's family put up for sale. His granddaughter, Linda Ruth Tassetti, says a portion of the proceeds will go to charity. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Daybreak brought to you by National Realty, NRIA, developers of high-return income-producing properties for investor partners. See them at NRIA.net.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Futures are higher this morning. Asian stocks traded mixed to mostly lower today as investors awaited a wait-and-see approach ahead of this week's Fed meeting. Bloomberg's Juliet Sully reports.
Good morning, Karen. Hong Kong stocks were an outlier, rising in the city following Sunday's protests and an apparent about-face from the chief executive to suspend debate over a highly controversial extradition law. Elsewhere, semiconductor stocks were again sold off after Broadcom slashed its forecast, triggering a global chip sell-off. Data out of Singapore showed the trade war is starting to bite, with non-oil domestic exports plunging the most since February 2013. Driven by an ongoing slump in the electronics sector. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Juliet, thank you. S&P futures are up about 4 points this morning. Dow futures up 30, NASDAQ futures up 21. The DAX in Germany's up 0.1%. 10-year Treasury down 8/32nd, yield 2.10%, yield on the 2-year 1.87%. NYMEX crude oil down 0.5% or 26 cents to $52.26 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.5% or $7.10 to $13.37.40 an ounce. The euro 1.1215 against the dollar. The yen 108.59. And Bitcoin is climbing past $9,000 to its highest since May 2018 as reports that Facebook is due to unveil a digital currency added to optimism that cryptocurrencies are becoming more widely adopted by mainstream finance. Right now, Bitcoin is at $9,168, up 8.5%. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. A spokesman for Iran's nuclear agency says Tehran will increase uranium enrichment levels based on the country's needs. It comes after Secretary of State Mike Pompeo believes attacks on oil tankers near a Middle East shipping route were committed by Iran. President Trump officially kicks off his reelection campaign with a rally tomorrow in Orlando, Florida. Earlier, multiple reports say the president severed ties with some of his pollsters after leaks of surveys showing him trailing former Vice President Joe Biden in key states. In baseball, the Yankees won, the Mets lost, along with the A's and Giants. The Red Sox downed the Orioles in 10 innings, 8-6. The Nationals won. In golf, Gary Woodland beat Brooks Koepka to win the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. 520 on Wall Street. We're live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. It's the start of a big week for central bank policy. Matt Maley, equity strategist at Miller Tabak, joins us now to gauge the chances of rate cuts ahead, what it all means for your portfolio. Matt, good morning. Do you kind of get the feeling that we have all our eggs in one basket that is waiting for cuts that may or may not come?
I definitely think so. I mean, the one thing that we've seen in the last week or so, or actually 2 weeks, I should say, with a bounce back in the market, is that people are really, investors are really looking for almost an automatic rate cut coming, not today, not this week, but in July. And I'm not so sure we're going to get that. But the reason why I say this is that what's really changed since the beginning of May? Really nothing. If anything, things have gotten worse. In other words, the situation with the trade war with China, or trade negotiations with China, have not gotten any better at all, number one. Number two, if anything, we've seen a lot of the economic data come in worse than expected. And number three, we've seen earnings estimates come down by the consensus around Wall Street. So the fundamental outlook, is, if anything, has gotten a little bit worse, and yet the stock market has bounced back. And I think it's only bouncing back from an oversold condition we had 2 weeks ago and the expectations of a rate hike. A rate cut, of course. And I'm not exactly sure we're going to get that.
Okay, what do I do as an investor?
Well, I think number one, I think you take advantage of this recent bounce and raise a little bit more cash, because I think the Fed, one of the things, reasons why I don't think they'll cut too automatically in July is that we haven't seen the kind of stress in the economy or the markets. And we've seen it over the last 10 years that when the Fed really acts, when they want to ease, it's usually they're just as much market dependent as they are data dependent. And the market just isn't that weak yet. So I think they'll wait for that to happen. But I think if investors can get a little bit more defensive and raise a little bit of cash, they can take advantage of another leg lower that we'll get at some point this summer.
More defensive stocks also in the cards?
Yeah, and it's another one of the reasons why I'm just a little cautious here. I'm not looking for the end of the world or a bear market, you look at the consumer staple stocks. They're acting very, very well. They made a new all-time high last week, and that's another reason to be concerned, because when defensive stocks are leading the market higher, that's usually not a good sign, especially when you're seeing other leadership groups like the Russell 2000 and the semiconductor stocks and the transportation stocks lag. Not only is the consumer staples acting well, but exactly half of the XLP consumer staple ETF is hitting 52-week high. So it's a nice broad rally there.
You're an equity guy, but at this point, would you also maybe short treasuries?
Well, because I do think if we get another leg lower in the market, you'll see a flight to quality situation and flight to safety. That's what we'll take we'll take rates lower again, long-term rates lower again, that will of course move the bond market of the TLT ETF, the Treasury ETF, higher. So I wouldn't want to short those right now.
Yeah, you look at the five-year four, basically the projections for what rates are going to be 5 years out, and it is low at this point. In this environment, low rates, low inflation, I mean, is it really that good for the investment climate right now?
Well, you always get a situation where things are going back and forth. You go between what's going to take the market higher, lower interest rates, which tend to be good. I mean, make it the alternative very tough, number one. But number two, lower rates also signal a slower growth. So are you going to get the kind of fundamental growth that is usually needed to get the stock market higher? I just think right now that it's a reason to be a little bit more cautious, and that like we saw last in the fourth quarter of last year, you're going to get an opportunity to buy things at lower levels, and if you have, but you're not going to be able to do that if you don't have any cash on the sidelines. So I think raising a little bit is a good idea right now.
Matt, always a pleasure. We appreciate it. Matt Maley, equity strategist at Miller Tabak & Company. Again, a big week for central bank policy, and including the Fed meeting this week, at which Matt says, don't expect any rate moves, but look at the language for indications of future moves from the Federal Reserve. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And S&P futures right now up 4 points. Dow futures, they're up 27 points. And the NASDAQ E-mini futures, 20 points higher. This is Bloomberg.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991. To Boston. Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco. Bloomberg 960. To the country. Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm John Tucker. Bloomberg Daybreak being brought to you by Eisner Amper's 4th Annual Alternative Investment Summit, June 19th. Network with your peers and enjoy a fireside chat with keynote Alex Rodriguez. To request your invitation, email events@eisneramper.com.
And we're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures are higher as we begin a new trading week and ahead of this week's Fed meeting. And as Bloomberg's Vinnie Del Giudice reports, there's evidence that Wall Street calls for a rate cut could be premature.
In a surprising sign of strength, retail sales and industrial production both bounced back in May. The gains in last week's burst of data were broad-based and across sectors. Economists surveyed by Bloomberg see the Fed holding its benchmark interest rate steady for now. Major U.S. data reports this week are centered on the property market, housing starts, and existing home sales. We could see gains in both based on economists' forecasts. As far as today, look for home builder confidence data and the New York Fed's factory report. Vinnie Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Boeing Chief Executive Officer Dennis Muilenburg says he's confident the grounded 737 MAX aircraft will return to service this year in the wake of two deadly crashes.
That is a multi-decade airplane that's going to be very a strong operator for our customers. And we're confident in that product strategy. And we are taking a look at the middle of the market. Airplane is the next option. But that long-term multi-decade strategy hasn't changed.
Muilenburg made the comments with Bloomberg at the Paris Air Show.
Also at the show, Airbus unveiled a new model, the A321 XLR. It's bid by the European plane maker to capture untapped demand for long-range flights on smaller planes.
And shares of Lufthansa down more than 10%. The airline says it fears a European fare war will squeeze profits, at least for the rest of the year.
Bloomberg News has learned Deutsche Bank is considering exiting from U.S. equities trading and creating a bad bank to wind down legacy assets as part of a broader overhaul to be announced next month.
And Huawei has prepared a doomsday outlook for smartphone sales because of the Trump administration's blacklisting. Sources say the Chinese company is ready for a drop of up to 60% in international phone shipments. Huawei is the world's second largest smartphone seller. And we have S&P futures this morning pointing to a higher open on Wall Street. They're up 4 points right now, up about 0.2%. The Dow futures, they're up 34 points. That's up 0.1%. And the NASDAQ E-mini futures, 21 points higher. That's up about 0.3%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Just ahead, world and national news. It's 5:33 on Wall Street, and let's get news from around the world this morning. We say good morning to Bloomberg's Michael Barr.
Good morning, John. A leader in Hong Kong's 2014 Umbrella Movement demonstrations joined protesters after his release from prison. Joshua Wong's release after spending 2 months in prison came as protesters were still gathered near Hong Kong's government headquarters. At its peak, Wong says nearly 2 million protesters showed up yesterday over an extradition bill promoted by the territory's leader, Carrie Lam.
I believe it's time for Carrie Lam to end her term, and also it's time for her to step down. And it's hard for us to believe the liar, which means Carrie Lam, will really suspend the proposal forever. What we ask for is fully withdraw the evil law.
Wong also called for Hong Kong to drop all political persecutions. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says the U.S. is considering a full range of options to deal with the latest incident with Iran. Tensions have been rising between the U.S. and Iran after recent attacks on oil tankers in the Strait of Hormuz. President Trump and Vice President Pence officially kick off their 2020 campaign with a rally in Orlando, Florida tomorrow. It comes as multiple reports say Trump's re-election campaign has fired some of its pollsters after leaks of surveys showing the president trailing former Vice President Joe Biden in key states. Meanwhile, we're learning more about President Trump's one-on-one interview with ABC's George Stephanopoulos that aired last night. Once again, the president slammed the media.
You're here right now. You are president of the United States. Yet it seems like you just feel this need to push back at perceived enemies.
No, at false stories, at fake news. Nobody has any idea how corrupt the media is. They're corrupt. Not all of it, fortunately.
The president also says he expects the fight over border security to be a big election issue. The president of Argentina is promising a thorough investigation into a massive blackout that hit tens of millions of people, including Uruguay and Paraguay. The power outage began Sunday morning, halting transportation in Buenos Aires and disrupting phone and internet communications. Water supplies were also cut off. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. Coming up on 5:36 on Wall Street, time now for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. And here's John Stashower.
John, Gary Woodland was like so many guys on the PGA Tour. Nothing special. 35-year-old from Kansas, won a couple tournaments, but going to last year's PGA only once in 27 majors, and he finished in the top 20. He ended up 6th at that PGA and 8th at this year's, and at Pebble Beach, Woodland held the lead all weekend. Brooks Koepka came charging, looking for a third straight open title. Woodland held him off, birdied the 14th hole when he blasted his second shot to the green. He had a great chip to save par on 17. On 18, he needed only a bogey to win. He had a birdie, finished 13 under par. When Tiger Woods won the Open at Pebble Beach in 2000 by 15 shots, his score was minus 12. Even in defeat, Koepka continues to amaze in majors. 4 titles in this year, 1 win and 2 second place finishes.
I was just trying to shoot as low as possible. It was nice to get off to such a good start. I felt like, all right, man, we got a ball game now. And it was fun. And, you know, it was some excitement around the golf course. And that's what you want. And, you know, Gary, he played a hell of a round today. Props to him for the way he hung in there. And, you know, to go out in style like that is pretty cool.
Next up, the British Open next month. Tiger, who finished 21st, says he won't play until then. Good weekend for the Yankees. 18 runs in 2 games. 10-3 route in Chicago as Brett Gardner and Austin Romine both drove in 4 runs. A homer for Cameron Maben to back James Paxton. Yanks host Tampa Bay tonight. The winner will be in first place. Mets lost to the Cardinals 4-3 on a Paul DeJong home run. 8th inning, DeJong in 20 games versus the Mets, hitting 361 with 9 homers, 5 in his last 5 games at Citi Field. Paul Goldschmidt, a first inning 2-run shot. Cards only had 1 other hit. No homers for the Mets. They had hit one in 13 straight games, 19 in a row at home. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashel. John?
Hi, John. Thanks a lot. It is now 5:38 on Wall Street. The latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now with a cover of the U.S. purging Chinese Americans from cancer research. Also in this week's issue, why pregnant women still have it hard at work. Claire Sunnith wrote the story for Bloomberg Business Week.
So many women say, oh, yeah, but then there was also the time that I got pregnant and my boss did XYZ, or I got fired or I got demoted. And I thought, but there's a law that actually just flatly says that you can't do that.
You can read more about this in other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Know what matters and why. Visit businessweek.com or pick up a copy of the magazine on newsstands now. Also, listen to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly. Weekdays at 2 p.m. Wall Street time right here on Bloomberg Radio. And it is now 5:38 on Wall Street, time for the Tri-State Business Report. And for that, we're joined live by Bloomberg's Ed Corey. Good morning, Ed.
Hi, John. New York City will lose about 340,000 square feet of department stores this year. But Bloomberg says Manhattan is still the nation's most prestigious place to sell fashion and luxury goods. When Nordstrom opens its megastore, it's going to be the biggest new retail space the city has seen in over half a century. Stamford-based Crane is preparing to ramp up pressure on rival Serkor International. Sources tell Bloomberg it's taking its $45 a share takeover offer directly to the industrial product company's shareholders. NJ.com is out with its list of New Jersey's top workplaces. Staffing Alternatives, a temporary staffing company based in North Brunswick, came out on top among small companies. Cedar Crest Village, a senior living community in Pompton Plains, was first among large companies. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. John?
Ed, thanks a lot. 5:39 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. And let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KFAB in Omaha. American farmers now face the prospect of failing to plant soybeans because of the heavy rains.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and on WBBM in Chicago, the CEO of Boeing says the airplane maker is doing an end-to-end review of its safety process as the company looks for answers following two fatal crashes of the 737 MAX.
I'm Anna Edwards. On Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London, we're reporting on last night's TV debate that saw Tory leadership candidates butt heads over Brexit.
I'm Steve Potosk, and on KYW in Philadelphia, we're talking about Big Dairy fighting back against vegan butter.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. Goldman Sachs, embracing its status as a private equity giant, is now looking for ways to raise more client funds for private investing and rely less on its own balance sheet. Bloomberg has learned that Goldman will consolidate the investing activities of multiple units to add more heft to its merchant banking division. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And futures in the U.S. point to a higher open on Wall Street. S&P futures right now, they're up 4 points, a rise of about a tenth of a percent. The Dow futures up 31 points, and the Nasdaq E-mini futures 20 points higher.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European stocks and U.S. stock index futures edging higher following a mixed session in Asia as a big week for central bank policy gets underway. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 3 points, Dow futures up 22, NASDAQ futures up 15. The DAX in Germany is up a tenth of a percent. 10-year Treasury down 9/32, yield 2.11%, yield on the 2-year 1.87%. NYMEX crude oil down 0.6% or 31 cents to $52.20 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.5% or $6.90 to $13.37.60 an ounce. The euro 1.1215 against the dollar, the yen at 108.61. And Bitcoin climbing past $9,000 to its highest since May 2018. Currently at $9,163, it's up 8.4%. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Karen. Protests continue today in Hong Kong over a controversial extradition measure that would allow criminal suspects to be extradited to China. The measure has been temporarily suspended for the time being. Yesterday, about 2 million people took to the streets to protest the bill. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says the U.S. is considering a full range of options against Iran to deal with the latest alleged attacks on oil tankers in the Strait of Hormuz. There are also reports of a missile being fired on a U.S. drone. In baseball, the Yankees won. The Mets lost along with the A's and Giants. The Red Sox downed the Orioles in 10 innings, 8-6. The Nationals won. In golf, Gary Woodland beat Brooks Koepka to win the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. We are live for the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, where it is now 5:49 on Wall Street. And it's time to check in with Bloomberg Opinion, our platform offering informed perspectives on a range of global topics and expert data-driven commentary on breaking news. And we are joined live this morning by Ed Evans, Bloomberg Opinion editor in our London bureau. Let's start off with this piece. I mean, we just heard Michael talking about the hundreds of thousands showing up for the protests in Hong Kong. Why this time was different for Hong Kong?
It's worth comparing these protests with 2014 and the Occupy Central protests, where, of course, back then the government refused to budge and the protest was eventually cleared by force. And it's worth asking what was different this time. The most obvious answer here is the role of business. Occupy had limited support from companies. By contrast, opposition to the extradition bill has united various strands of Hong Kong society, everything from civic and trade groups to religious organisations and the legal business. Business stalwarts like HSBC and Standard Chartered, they were among multinationals that allowed flexible working hours last Wednesday when protest organisers had called for a citywide strike. The second key factor to consider here is the role of China. In the 2014 protests called for full democracy and opposed Beijing's formula for the election of Hong Kong's leader. In the case of the extradition bill, Hong Kong Chief Executive Carrie Lam insisted repeatedly that the proposal had originated with the city's government itself rather than Beijing. Now, that's an important piece of wiggle room. And Beijing might be grateful for the political cover that Lam's stance provided, for the threatened damage to Hong Kong's financial and business environment far outweighed any political benefits from drawing the city tighter into the mainland's embrace.
And our next piece, this comes with a comment about a pig. China mad at UBS. Welcome to emerging markets.
Yeah, these are comments by Paul Donovan, the global chief economist at the wealth management business, that he used in a report last week that fueled a huge conflagration on social media, where it's now starting to affect clients. State-owned China Railway Construction has decided against hiring UBS as a joint global coordinator on a dollar bond sale. Haitong International Securities Group has already cut business ties with the Swiss bank, and the Securities Association of China has recommended members shun research by Mr. Donovan. Two things here. One, the timing here was deeply unfortunate. Growth is losing steam despite the stimulus package. The stock market's in a correction tone. Donovan's comments were inauspicious, especially at a time when Chinese investors were already in a foul mood. The other thing to point out here is, and a cynic would ask about the conflict of interest, apparently, in this case. I mean, after all, core members of the Chinese Securities Association, which is pushing for Donovan's dismissal, and the Securities Association of China, which aims to block out UBS, they both compete with the Swiss bank for Chinese money. So in that light, the outcome with Haitong isn't all that surprising. But you could say that China's response here has been a bit heavy-handed, but ultimately it's tough luck. It's called the cost of doing business in emerging markets, and China is by no means an exception here. Foreign banks have gotten into just as much trouble for lesser offences, and just two examples from the recent past come to mind. Look at an economist at Morgan Stanley who left Morgan Stanley in 2007 after an email he wrote citing money laundering as one reason for Singapore's success. Never mind that it was an internal message, but he was out. Or consider what happened to JP Morgan in Indonesia in 2017. The government severed business ties with the bank, eliminating its role as a primary dealer in sovereign bond auctions. That all came about after the bank's research division downgraded the nation's stocks to underweight. At the end of the day, beggars can't be choosers. And with its investment banking business falling behind that of US mega banks and its Swiss rival Credit Suisse, UBS really needs its wealth management business. And in that case, it had better start doing more to please a very moody client.
Okay, Ed, thank you very much. We appreciate it. And you could read more on these and other stories from Bloomberg Opinion at Bloomberg.com/opinion. Also on the Bloomberg terminal by simply typing OPIN go. Karen.
John, thank you. It's 5:53 on Wall Street. It's time for the Bloomberg Law Report. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning with Steve Podisk in the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington newsroom.
A federal appeals court says a court in Seattle must reevaluate its block on President Trump's ban on transgender soldiers serving in the military months after the Supreme Court cleared the policy to take effect. The EPA and other federal agencies have been directed by President Trump to eliminate at least one-third of their advisory committees, which provide advice on regulatory, scientific, and policy matters. And a court ruled Pennsylvania interscholastic lacrosse referees are independent contractors, not employees, who can form a union.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
All right, Steve, thank you. Now other legal news we're following this morning. President Trump's environmental deregulation agenda has been largely unsuccessful for 2 years, as one by one his climate proposals were defeated by legal challengers with arguments that the administration cut corners and failed to follow the rules. Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks to Bloomberg News legal reporter Kartike Malhotra for more on the story.
Kartike, start by telling us how the Trump administration has been trying to deregulate until now.
Sure. So for the last 2 years, we've seen rule after rule on be it fracking or royalties and valuations or waste rules that were revising and loosening the screws on regulations. And they were doing it by simply trying to postpone enforcement of Obama-era rules that had just been enforced, or simply raising questions about how those rules would be enforced. And they were doing it sort of informally, without going through the rules set by the Administrative Procedures Act for rewriting environmental regulations. And the key component of the APA that they were failing to abide by was a requirement for notice and comment. This was effectively a transparency measure and an opportunity for the public and companies and agencies at state levels to get involved in the rulemaking process, and they weren't being given an opportunity. So when the EPA or Bureau of Land Management came up with a revised rule, they would be sued by state attorneys general or other climate agencies like Earth Justice or the Sierra Club for failing to comply with the APA. And almost universally, federal judges from California to Washington, D.C. ruled that the administration was in violation of the APA, and those rules were knocked back.
So you write that the Trump administration has a secret weapon now, and that is they're going to actually start following the rules.
That's right. That's right. So 2 years have passed since the Trump administration took power, and in that time, it appears as though these agencies, be it the APA or BLM, have either figured out to comply with the rules or have decided that it's worth their while in order to pass final regulations, final rules to scale back Obama-era norms.
And that's Bloomberg News legal reporter Kartike Malhotra speaking to Bloomberg's June Grasso. You can listen to more legal analysis like this on Bloomberg Politics, Policy, Power, and Law weekdays at 12 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio. And find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com. Attorneys will find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well. Visit BloombergLaw.com for more information. John.
And Karen, futures this morning, slightly higher. S&P futures, they're up 3 points, up 0.1%. The Dow futures, up 28 points. That's up 0.1%. The NASDAQ E-mini futures, 16 points higher. That is up 0.2%. Also keeping an eye on Bitcoin, getting a pop this morning, up 8.7% right now at 9,186. Seeing the yield on the benchmark, 10-year note at 2.11 right now. The yield is up 3 basis points. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak.